Blog Talk Radio.
To be a part of this morning show, of today's show. So no matter where you are in the world, welcome, welcome, welcome. I have a special guest joining us today live, a friend and colleague from USA Today. He is the NFL columnist. He'll be joining us in about 10 minutes. And so we're going to talk, obviously, a lot of NFL football on today's show. But there is so much happening around this country. I would be remiss if we didn't talk about it just a little bit. And after we do football, we can always go back to it, because actually the most important thing that's happening is the tone and the pitch of the animosity and hatred that is real right now across these United States of America. And, you know, on this show, this is a sports show, but we also talk politics. We talk about a little bit of food. And it's not just my show, it is your show. So things that are on your mind, I welcome you to join me and talk about them. So as I said, we're going to have Jared Bell joining us shortly. But until he gets here, I want to talk a little bit about just what's happening around the country. There are conversations taking place. There are probably not nearly enough conversations taking place. This whole race relations issue is center stage right now. And while people have wanted to really deny that there was any issue in terms of race relations over the past 8 years, especially under President Obama, because for some there seemed to be the thought that with an African-American president, I mean, race relations must be fine. And so now we are reminded, because some of us have always known that there were some challenges and issues, right? Well, now a lot of people are getting to know that. A lot of people are getting to know that, are seeing firsthand, wow, there really is a problem, and we should pay attention. So, you know, I'm happy to talk about it on this show, and I'm happy to hear your comments about it. You know, we have one real rule about comments, because it's an interactive show, and I welcome your comments, even your, you know, I put your post, your comments show up on screen. But one of the things that's really important in terms of being a part of this show is that as long as you, you know, you are respectful, and you can disagree with me or others that are a part of the show, but there must be a level of respect. So we're not going to speak to a bunch of name calling or, you know, just the vitriol that we see that's running rampant right now. So this is a place that you can have an opinion that differs from somebody else's. And if you're able to express it and articulate it in a way that maybe, you know, somebody else who thinks differently from you can learn from your position or what you think. So you're welcome to do that. If you want to call and be a part of the show, you can do that at 773-897-6343. That number to call in is 773-897-6343. Or you can actually come on and post your comments live on the screen. And so we are here for at least the next hour, talking about all things sports, talking about the hot topics around the country, and at the top of that list is what happened in Charlottesville, West Virginia last weekend. The first thing I want to do is say just to send condolences to the family of the young woman who was killed by the car that was driven into the crowd of protesters. And the two officers who were in the helicopter patrolling over the protest. You know, a lot of times it seems in some places that I see conversations taking place, that loss of life is overlooked. And that kind of makes it really real, right? It makes it really real that there are people who are losing their lives in this fight. And what is the fight really about? It's about control. And I think because, unfortunately, we have an incredible lack of leadership from our president. It is giving license, if you will, permission for these people who often hide behind computers and hoods and lay low. I'm talking about the white supremacists, the Klan, the white nationalists, the neo-Nazis. Now they are feel free to come out in their T-shirts and khakis with the little tiki torches and walk through and say, hey, we're here and if there's nothing you can do about it, and this is what we have to say. So, there we go. So, you know, if you have thoughts about it, I know I have thoughts about it. I have been incredibly disappointed with the lack of leadership from the president. But here's what we do know. What we know is where the president stands. We know where President Trump, where he is as an American. And so we know that. I'm not terribly surprised. I didn't think it would get to this point. I didn't know quite what to expect from his presidency. I didn't really expect this, but I can't say that I am surprised by it because this is who he has shown us that he is. You know, even if you just go back to him starting the whole birther movement, right? But we can go back further than that to the Central Park Five. We can go back to him discriminating against people in terms of his housing, who he didn't want to rent to in New York. I mean, he has a history of being racist and biased, and he's just being true to who he is. He is speaking to a group of people who support and love him, and my concern is, where are the other people? If you say that you are really an American, and I'm talking about politicians, where is that leadership? Is it just about whether you wear an R or a Democrat on your little carrying card, or does it matter most that you should wear an A for American? I am shocked by the deafening silence from some of the leaders, like a Mitch McConnell in the Senate, who I am told, because I have not researched Mitch McConnell a lot, I was not a fan of his when he came out at the beginning of President Obama's tenure and said they would make sure he failed. That didn't seem real American to me. I couldn't imagine how a good American could take that tone and that posture. But I'm told he's got a history of a lot of great work in the area of civil rights, that he was at Dr. King's speech at the March on Washington. Hang on a second. All right, there we go. Can you hear me now? I was trying a different mic situation, and it may not have worked so well, so we're just going to go back to the regular mic. All right, good morning. I hope they didn't miss all that. Good morning, Heaven's Angel. Welcome, welcome. All right, can you hear me now? I was trying something different with a mic. Let's see. Let's see here. Let me try one other thing. Okay, you can hear me. Great. All right. There we go. Let me bring the camera back. All right. Good morning, Kim Williams. Thank you, thank you. So, I started the show. We're going to have Jared Bell join us shortly from the USA Today. He's an NFL columnist. But I can't really start this show and not talk about just the tone and tenure, the tone and pitch of what's happening around the country. I was saying that the incredible lack of leadership that we right now are seeing from the president of this country is disheartening. But let's move beyond him, because we shouldn't be terribly surprised that this president has, you know, sits on the side. His opinion is what it is. He feels the way he feels. We've seen it. He started the birther movement. He was big with the Central Park 5 years ago. I mean, if you remember that case. And before that, even before that, he had a history of not wanting to rent to people of color. And so we shouldn't be terribly surprised about what we see from him. I am, however, surprised or at least disappointed. I don't know how surprised I am. Is that really the truth? About the lack of leadership and response we're getting from people, from some of the leaders in the Congress and Senate. You know, that's been incredibly disappointing to me. Mitch McConnell, who I'm told has an incredible record in terms of civil rights, And he marched with, I mean, he was at the speech of Dr. King, the March on Washington. I don't know. I don't see that because he's been really silent, and I think these are really dangerous times. So while this is a sports show, and we're going to bring in Jared Bell to talk about some NFL football, the biggest story in the country right now is the tone and what's happening, you know, around this nation. So first, I don't want to waste much time because I know he is a busy man, so I appreciate Jared taking a few minutes to visit with us today. Jared Bell is an NFL columnist from USA Today. Good morning, Jared. Thank you for joining me. Welcome. Well, I tell you, man, it's been a lot going on. I mean, I'm in Houston, so, of course, I'm following the Texans and all things Texas and Cowboys. And then, of course, the biggest story on my show every week for the past month or so has also been Colin Kaepernick. So I know you've written about it. You've talked to, you're right there with players all around the league. Can you give us just your initial thoughts about the Colin Kaepernick story? And I've heard some national writers say, well, players are waiting to hear from Colin to know how they should proceed. And I want to know your thoughts about that. Welcome.
Yeah, that, you just laid out a whole lot of stuff there. But, you know, it's apropos. I mean, there's no other way to really address it because there are so many layers to this Colin Kaepernick story and the issues surrounding it. So let's try to tackle a few of them. One, you know, where do you start? Okay, Colin Kaepernick still does not have a job, obviously, and like you said, that's kind of been a narrative on your show for many weeks, and it's something that I've written about. Others have kind of carried on as we've gone through this offseason. So that's still there, and I think the Baltimore Ravens, being a team with a quarterback dealing with a back injury, Ryan Mallett as the backup, the fact that they did not sign him is really a shame. Miami had a situation where they lost Ryan Tannehill for the season. They signed Jay Cutler, which I don't have a problem with in one sense, in the sense that Jay Cutler had a connection with Adam Gates, so you see that in terms of knowing the system and the working relationship. So you understand that to a degree,
right.
Although, you know, you can also make the argument, well, hey, maybe Kaepernick's a better quarterback than Jay Cutler, but at least Gates knows Cutler. They know that Cutler knows the system, all of that. And if Kaepernick goes to Miami with the controversy that was there last year when about him wearing the Castro shirt, that's another layer to the scene. But I will say all that to say Colin Kaepernick had one of his best games last year in Miami against those Miami Dolphins. They should know that in terms of, hey, here's a guy who could play this game. But I think the Ravens right now are the obvious team that's really kind of dropping the ball on Colin Kaepernick, because if you believe the reports, and I do, that suggest that Ozzie Newsome, a fair-minded general manager, and John Harbaugh, whose brother Jim Harbaugh coached Colin Kaepernick, that they want him, and the owner, Steve Bisciotti, and the team president, maybe even Dick Cass, and talking to fans and other people about it, have provided the resistance. So I think that's a shame. In terms of another part of this, what do the other NFL players do, and should Colin Kaepernick speak out? I've kind of gone both ways on that, Kim, because to one degree, there's been a lot of people talking for Colin Kaepernick. And I think at this point, personally, it would not hurt Colin Kaepernick to come out and say something, although I can also understand him saying, hey, I don't want to be out there begging for a job.
Right.
So I can kind of understand both sides of it, but that's not really the big issue. So if he decides he doesn't want to talk until he gets a job, and conceivably any team that is interested in Colin Kaepernick can talk to him, he can talk to them, and I think that even the Ravens may have had some of that going on as they've considered it. Colin Kaepernick may not be speaking to the media and to press conferences at large, but the teams can find him, and they can talk to him. So there are questions in terms of how his psyche is right now, what his position is on how active he will be, and I don't think he really should sit down
Right.
But the point being, I like the things that Colin Kaepernick has spoken out about. Now, we can parse that in some ways and say, okay, well, maybe you went a little bit over the top when you wore the police pig socks and things like that. So there is room to question kind of how Colin Kaepernick has done some things. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think there's much of a question that the guy is taking a stand for the right reasons. So I don't really buy that he has to talk, but I don't think it would hurt him if he did decide to talk. Even just to acknowledge, hey, I know there's been a lot of conversation, a lot of people have said things about me, including, you know, any number of journalists, but also players and others as well. Maybe he wants to take the opportunity, he should take the opportunity to at least clear the air. That doesn't mean he has to be out there every day making statements, but it probably wouldn't be bad for people to hear from him. But I can also understand that there is a double standard there.
Right.
Most players that are looking for jobs don't have to have the requirement of coming out and speaking publicly before a team will sign them. So the teams, they can definitely talk to them and sign them. In terms of the other part of this that has really kind of escalated in recent days has been the Kaepernick spirit, Kim.
Yeah.
So, hey, here's a guy who's been blackballed from the NFL, and I'll say it because I believe that that's kind of what happened. And if he's not being blackballed, this is the effect of being blackballed. So you are
call it whatever you want to call it, right?
Blackballed, okay? So we can play with the words on that one in the semantics. But the fact is, he doesn't have a job. But and we know that the reason why is because of the fear about, you know, whether or not he'll bring too much attention and drama and all of that stuff. Well, guess what? The Kaepernick spirit has lived on in the NFL through the likes of Michael Bennett, through the likes of Marshawn Lynch, even players who have done things on a lesser scale, like Malcolm Jenkins raising the fist, even Chris Long, who's come out and spoken, you know, very forcefully about what happened in his hometown in Charlottesville. And Long, by the way, was also a very vocal player last year when the whole Kaepernick drama was such a, you know, big talking point in the NFL. Long was one of the few white players who came out and expressed a lot of sensitivity and support for Colin Kaepernick. So it wasn't really a big surprise that Chris Long came out and denounced the racist events in Charlottesville last weekend. So this thing is not going away for the NFL in terms of players using the platform to protest. I wrote about Michael Bennett, and I wrote about Richard Sherman, too, for my visit to Seattle earlier this month. And, you know, Bennett is a guy who has always been proactive in the community and feels like it's part of his responsibility to speak up on social issues as it relates to black people. And I commend him for that because that's not always a popular thing. We hear stick to sports. We hear, well, he's a racist for doing that sort of thing. But he and his brother Martellus, who were honored, by the way, earlier this year by BET, Black Entertainment Television, with a BET Award for their activism, they have, you know, made it part of their business to try to help the community and support things and speak and help people.
Don't they do something in Haiti,
Jared?
They have some effort where they are doing some outreach in Haiti.
Pardon me?
Don't they have some, they're doing some outreach in Haiti as well?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's really Cliff Averill, who has been the main person with Haiti. And Cliff Averill, his folks are from Haiti, and he has really kind of taken that as one of his projects. He went there this year and built some houses in a couple, 3 years ago or whatever it was, when they had the hurricane, he went there for relief efforts. So that has become a pet project of Cliff Averill's. And so this offseason, he took some NFL players with them, including Michael Bennett, including Marshawn Lynch, and they went there and they built a school, they built some homes, and I was talking to Bennett about it, and I've talked to Averill about it in the past as well. It's something that they just feel like they are committed to doing. And so, you know, all praise to these guys for doing that. And that's the weird thing. So if people want to come down on Michael Bennett and Kaepernick, too, who has done so many things in the community, and a lot of it under the radar, you know, this is we expect from athletes, right? To give back to the community and things like that. So then when some of these guys do it and then they, you know, they take it to another level and raise awareness of some of these issues, then all of a sudden they get, you know, a backlash. That's the institutional racism in the system in this country that has existed throughout our lifetimes and way before that.
Right.
That, you know, that kind of castigates black people and black men and black women, too, for that matter, from doing things that either raise awareness or try to fight the system. I heard one of the most ridiculous things on the radio the other night from Bill Polian, okay? And Bill Polian is a guy, Hall of Fame GM. I worked with him at ESPN. Have had a lot of respect for him, especially for his ability to build football teams. But he said something that was so off the mark, I need to call him to tell you the truth. But he said that nothing ever good happens from protest. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, he's got to be ridiculously crazy to say that. Now, I understand the view of the NFL and even owners and, you know, really being nervous about their product being used as a platform for these players. Now, mind you, a national anthem protest is about the same as someone taking a moment of silence when there's some tragedy that, you know, that touches all of us, you know, collectively as a nation, right? We've seen it, you know, with 9/11. We've seen it with other tragedies. Please have a moment of silence. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Well, from the NFL's perspective, from the standpoint of an NFL game being a package, a national anthem protest really is a lot like taking a moment of silence.
Right.
It's there at the beginning of the game. It may not even be televised as part of the game package, and then you go on with the game. And in the fourth quarter, when the Patriots are, you know, putting it on the Steelers or, or whatever that game might be, you're not really thinking so much about the anthem or that moment of silence
right.
when you get to the meat of the game. That's the point I'm making. But for Polian to say protests don't do any good, I mean, and he also kind of elaborated it to the point of saying something like, well, you know, I know there was a Martin Luther King and that sort of thing, you know, to make that exception. So here's the deal, Bill Polian, and people who think like him. If there were no protests, if Rosa Parks had not sat down on that bus,
right.
what would have happened or what would have not happened? Obviously, throughout history, change comes from people raising awareness. And generally speaking, and I'm of the thinking, yeah, you want peaceful protests, but that protests have not always been peaceful, as we just saw last weekend in Charlottesville,
right.
because sometimes people take things into to another level and they get violent. That's not what you want, but protest does spark change. It raises awareness. And, hey, if Colin Kaepernick had not taken his stand last year, this issue would not be nearly on the level of consciousness in this nation as it has been. Even though we saw so many police shootings last year that raised controversy, I thought that Kaepernick and his stand and how it inspired other athletes, not only on a pro level and in other sports, but on a high school level and a youth level,
right.
I mean, it really raised awareness and forced people to talk about this as a nation in the context of everything else that was going on. So it was a good thing from that standpoint. Now, the people that say, hey, stick to sports, I want to escape to watch the sports and the games, and I don't want to think about this, well, guess what? The athletes who play the game are human beings as well,
right.
and even if they have not been particularly affected personally with some situations, say police brutality, they may know people who have.
Right.
They have people that are in their families and circle of friends and others that they know who are affected, and I think that's part of the motivation for guys speaking out. So bottom line, yeah, Kaepernick's gone,
yeah.
but the spirit of what he protested is going to live on in the NFL, and there's some other players there, and the NFL had better accept it and, you know, try to still have its games, but give the people that play the game the proper respect.
So let me ask you something. I have this conversation with a good friend, and she follows the show. She says that she can't understand why every player in the league isn't taking a knee. And so I said, well, the NFL is different. First of all, you know, there's never been a time where we as a people have all collectively done something. That's the first thing. But
right.
secondly, they don't have, they've not really exercised their power over the years. You know, you have owners that say, that they know, it's, the owners are all very conservative. This is not like the NBA. It's a different kind of a league. Do you think it's because, one, they're disconnected more now than maybe players were 20 years ago, or is it really more about, I don't want to have an issue because this is my job, this is my livelihood? Is it more of that?
There's some of all of that. And let me just start for a quick second. When you say the owners are conservative, I think, yeah, by and large, that's a fair statement when you talk about their income levels or their revenue, their worth, their net worth. But I also know that there is still some variance from one owner to another. Woody Johnson and Mike Brown, and Mike Brown will probably be offended that I put him in the same.
Yeah.
Woody Johnson, okay. So Mike Brown's different than Woody Johnson. Jerry Jones is different than Woody Johnson. Jerry Jones is different than Mike Brown, but Jerry Jones has some things he's has similar thoughts with Mike Brown and so on and so forth. Shaq Khan, the Jacksonville Jaguars owner, is different than Bob Kraft. You know, so you have,
yeah,
you know, the individuals that you have room for, you have gray area, you have different things that some people are passionate about versus others. So I don't want to put them all in the same boat to say that nothing can change just because they're this monolithic group, okay? By and large, when it comes to net worth and the economics, I think we can agree that, yeah, they all have their interests there. But, you know, Mark Davis, is he the same as Stan Kroenke? I don't think so. On some things, but there are a lot of things that they share. And when it comes to the product and the game, now that's when you start talking about how the NFL tries to operate, you know, as one group. But even then, I mean, you just look at kind of different things that have come up in the league over the years. They don't always agree on everything. A lot of times they come out with a united front, especially on these labor deals, but back behind the scenes, a lot of times they're duking it out amongst themselves as well. But I will say this, when it does come to the big issues, when they need to have a united front, they typically are able to get that done. And that's, you know, the commissioner tries to bring everybody together. And this goes way before Roger Goodell. It was Paul Tagovailoa, who was Goodell. That's kind of how they operate. By and large, it's like, okay, when we come out of this room and we do this labor deal, okay, we're all on the same page, right? That happens. With the players, it doesn't always happen like that. And I think there's a few reasons for that. Number one, think about the turnover with the players.
Right.
Okay, I was just talking to one of the players when I was in Rams camp, Andrew Whitworth, and he's on the NFLPA's executive committee. Like Richard Sherman's on that committee, and Lorenzo Alexander, and Malcolm Jenkins. And but Whitworth, we were talking about what they have to do to get ready for their next labor fight in about 4 years, right? And they're ramping up for it, the league's ramping up for it. And the point came up about how he's going to have to, he and other veteran players feel like it's their responsibility right now to really educate these guys, right? And it's like 2011 was when they had the lockout in the last labor deal. Think about how many players were not in the league in 2011 that are in the NFL right now. The turnover is tremendous, right? Tom Brady is going into year 18, right?
Wow.
Okay,
yeah.
There are some players who, you know, played, you know, 10 years, 12 years, 15 years. You've got them, but relatively speaking, those guys are rare. When you talk about a 53-man roster, I bet you a third of them are like 2 or 3 years in the league, and then 2 years from now, that there'll be another third at the bottom of the roster. So that's what happens with the NFL when it comes to players and the continuity of their group, right? The other thing is that, yeah, I think you touched on it when you addressed this, that some players are not as established, as emboldened to take a stand. They may want to, but they are fighting to keep that job as one of the lowest third guys on the roster, okay? Bryant has received some criticism coming out of Cowboys camp for some comments about it too, saying, hey, I don't want to have to say anything about the anthem Brooklyn. And guys will do that. Sometimes, you know, it's because they are not really enlightened on situations. And remember, all these guys are not as enlightened as you may want them to be. But
right.
Sometimes guys won't speak out because they don't really know a subject, or they're not passionate about a subject, or it really doesn't affect them. But also, I think it's fair to say some guys are just afraid to risk their livelihoods by sticking out for things, okay? So when I talked to Butler yesterday, it's kind of like, I don't really want to talk about that, blah, blah, blah. I asked him a couple questions and got the same response. Then I talked to Devin McCourty, the well-respected safety, leader of the secondary, one of the leaders on their team. I mean, you talk about, you know, Tom Brady, and you talk about Matthew Slater, and you talk about Devin McCourty.
Right.
You talk about, and maybe Dante Hightower, too. The core leaders of the Patriots team are those guys, and McCourty's right there, well-respected, well-spoken, all that. Well, I talked to him about it, and he was like, hey, I understand totally what guys are protesting. I understand the reason behind it. I have no problem with them doing it. And McCourty's a guy who raised his fist, too, last year during the protest, and so he got it from a different perspective and was not afraid to say it. Now McCourty has a long-term contract with the Patriots, a valuable guy. He was about to hit the market. They re-signed him to the deal. Belichick loves him, thinks he's one of the smartest players he's ever had on defense. All of that. So Devin McCourty is in a much more stable situation where he can speak out and speak his mind. And the same thing with Michael Bennett, who I talked to in Seattle a couple of weeks ago, being a guy who's 9 years in the league, or Richard Sherman, who's an all-pro. These are the types of guys that, have no fear when it comes to...
But it makes a difference. I think the point that you're making is what I try to help people understand. It makes a difference because their story is a little different, not just from how much money they've made, but how they're established and how teams deal with you. I mean, because of the value you have to the team, what a Richard Sherman does or says or a Bennett does or says is going to be much different from a rookie that comes in or from a free agent or a guy who's just trying to make the 53-man roster.
Exactly.
You're not going to see probably any practice squad guys taking a knee. I mean, that's the harsh reality of it. But let me ask you this. Something happened this week that I was really – kind of surprised by, and that was Hugh Jackson, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. And I like Hugh a lot. I don't know him personally, but when he came out and when he was specifically asked about the whole anthem, the protest, and taking a knee, and in his position, I just was, and I understand he's a head coach, but he does have an owner. You mentioned Mike Brown. I was surprised.
He's got Jimmy Hassel.
That's right. He's got Jimmy Hassel. I was surprised by Hugh Jackson's response.
Yeah, and I wasn't totally surprised because it's interesting because Hugh Jackson is a guy that in the time that I've covered the league, sometimes I haven't been able to get the most clear read on where he stands on some of these issues. Now, remember, a year ago, Hugh Jackson was interested in Colin Kaepernick.
Right.
He brought in RG3, ended up investing a lot of time in RG3, and then what does RG3 do? He goes to the first game, he lowers his shoulder, and he ends up getting hurt. And the whole thing up to that point with Hugh Jackson and RG3, like it was with RG3 and Mike Shanahan in Washington, was, hey, protect yourself. Don't do anything crazy to put
right.
your body at risk. Stay on the field. You are no value to the team if you're not on the field. So I'm saying all that to get a long way to get to your point here. But I'm saying Hugh Jackson was a guy who was willing to give RG3 a chance, and he really kicked the tires on Kaepernick. So when I was in Cleveland a couple of weeks ago, I said, why would you think about Kaepernick last year and not this year? And I didn't really get a good straight answer from him on it, except for, well, we've moved on. And they did bring in Brock Osweiler. But again, if you're trying to win and you're trying to give yourself an opportunity, even if you draft, DeShone Kizer as a, the future quarterback or whatever, you want to bring talent in and, cream rises to the top when you have good competition, all of that. So it really to our conversation about Kaepernick, and I get the sense that Hugh Jackson might be a guy trying to protect himself. Now, it wasn't too long ago that Hugh Jackson made a couple headlines locally for a charity that he's supporting against human trafficking, right?
Mm-hmm.
A good cause. It's something that he was concerned with, and he, through his foundation, they're going to support efforts to fight against trafficking, human trafficking, sex trafficking, things of that nature, okay? Things that we don't hear a lot about. So someone being in the realm of leadership to make a stand, to raise awareness for the issue, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So Hugh Jackson sounds hypocritical, where on one hand, he will say it's okay to use the platform to raise awareness about human trafficking, but on the other hand, these guys shouldn't protest. That's troubling to me too, Cam. Now, I received a text message from somebody close to the Browns or within the Browns organization saying, hey, it's been miscommunicated, it's been misconstrued what Hugh really means, but I don't know.
I heard him.
Probably a lot like you that you have to really scratch your head and wonder, because, you know, when people start saying things like, you know, protests are no good, or I hope that they work this out without us, I mean,
yeah.
Just think about that and think about, you know, our nation and the history, especially as it pertains to African-American people and the struggles that we've had and the protests that have been in the fabric of, you know, our historical timeline in this country. So, yeah, so Hugh Jackson really, you know, lost some points with me. Unless there's some other explanation, I'm really questioning, you know, kind of why he would say that. And because I think Jack Del Rio had the right answer last weekend when Marshawn Lynch sat out the national anthem. And remember,
right.
You know, Lynch was retired last year. So when a lot of players were, you know, demonstrating or doing various gestures last season, you know, on the heels of Kaepernick, Marshawn Lynch was not around. And so this year, Lynch sits out and told Jack Del Rio. And this all came from Del Rio because Lynch hadn't talked about it publicly, unless he has in the last day or so. I haven't seen anything that he said about it publicly. Now, he said some things about Kaepernick in an interview earlier that, you know, will let you know his thinking on it. Basically, yeah, he supports the right to do that. But in this specific case, it came from Jack Del Rio, and he said that Lynch told him that he has been sitting down during the anthem throughout his career, right? Now, I'm not going to dispute that. I think it's possible, Kim, because I think a lot of times people may not have noticed this at all.
Right.
And, you know, when the story came out with Kaepernick last year, it was interesting because Steve Weiss from the NFL Network broke the story. And I think Weiss, and I'm going to have to check with him to make sure I got this right, but I think he just kind of noticed it on his own, sitting in the press box. It was like the third preseason game or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Third or fourth preseason game. And he noticed it and decided to ask Kaepernick about it. And that's when he found out that, hey, this was, you know, part of his protest. So it had happened in games previous to that during the preseason. Now, Kaepernick was a guy who was coming off an injury, too. And so it may not have even been noticed because he may or may not have even been in uniform those first couple of preseason games. But anyway, Weiss took it upon himself to ask Kaepernick about it, and that's where the story started. Now, Lynch was retired last year, so had he done this last year, we would have known that, you know, it happened because everybody was looking to see, you know, during the pregame, it's like, okay, check, what's this guy doing? What's that guy doing?
Right.
Who's standing? Who's
raising
the fist? You know, that was kind of part of the pregame thing. You had to watch the national anthem last year when you covered the NFL. I thought Doug Baldwin made a great point, too, this week, Seahawks fan. Well, all these people who are criticizing players for what they do during the anthem, look at the behavior of fans in the stands during the anthem. Some people don't take their hats off. Some people make a beer run. People are cursing, talking, all of this stuff. So if you're going to have a standard for the players, what about some of the fans who are there?
And the media.
Yes, but let me just finish my point. actually say, okay, boy, you know, he's putting this out here to say that these people need support too. And I don't really find that to be problematic to me. But by the same token, when you do that, you should also show some respect to your people who are protesting something because black lives have been lost and there's been an injustice and, you know, a system here that, you know, really has existed for quite some time that is, you know, biased and discriminatory against African Americans. So you may be a white person who, you know, don't have the same level of passion or you feel the brunt of this like other people, like some minorities will, but you can at least be respectful and understand and say, hey, maybe this doesn't affect me because I've got this white privilege that I've been walking around with, but let me understand what my guys are dealing with and why they're doing what they're doing. And so Jack Del Rio gets, you know, big thumbs up for his response to me.
So before I let you go, I know I'm way over my time with you. There's two quick things. So Kim says, it's sad to her that the lack of unity among black men in the league is heartbreaking. She's in favor of all of them not showing up for work on Sunday. Shut this down. And so when people talk about a boycott and what could happen to affect the league, can anything happen? Do you see anything that would make the league, make the owners or Goodell gather the owners and rethink their position? Or, you know, they got their TV money. They've already gotten their season ticket money. Like, what can happen? Will this chatter, if it ramps up more, matter to them? What will make a difference?
Well, there's a couple of things. So I'm looking at this comment from Kim Williams, and I understand the spirit behind it, right? You know, need to have all this unity. But again, in so many situations, we don't all have unity, and we're not all one group because we could take that same philosophy and say, okay, black on black crime. And I'm not trying to give anybody a pass here at all. But I'm just saying, if we're just going to talk about what things we need to be united on, let's be united on, okay, make sure all the schools are up to par and make sure that there are different things that are, you know, socially equitable. I mean, you know, let's talk about economics. And you could find people all across the spectrum, even if you were to just say black people, you know, and you can find people who are spiritual and people who are not spiritual.
Right.
Find people who have levels of education and respect and people who may not have the same level. You can have people with, you know, certain socioeconomic resources and people who don't. So we're not all in the same group coming from the same place, although I do understand the spirit behind that thought. In terms of an NFL situation, you really can't expect it to be realistic that all of these guys are going to all of a sudden walk off the job because what? There's some social issues here. They need their jobs just like I need my job from a practical standpoint. Some guys are a lot more established and maybe they've got $10 million in the bank, where another guy is a rookie just trying to make it and he's just getting a taste of things and he has to account for himself and his family. So I don't think it's realistic to expect people to say, okay, we're all going to, you know, just not show up for work. No, that you don't want to do that, but you can still show up for work and make a point and say, okay, there's stuff out there that needs to be addressed, but I don't think just giving up your check and saying I'm not going to show up is the right thing. But players who have the ability and maybe feel like they are established enough and are not afraid to risk it like, you know, some others can speak up and make their point. And then if they lose their job, at least they've thought it through. And that's something, I'm going to make this real quick point, too. I'm Pat Kaepernick, because I talked to Dr. Harry Edwards about mm-hmm. Kaepernick earlier this offseason. And Harry Edwards, the sociologist, well-renowned, who helped organize the Olympic boycott with John Carlos and,
yeah.
and Tommy Smith to lose back in the 1968 Mexico Olympics. Well, he has been a consultant for the 49ers for decades, right? Going back to the Bill Walsh days. And Harry Edwards has always been a guy that the 49ers had in their building as a resource. Now, Harry Edwards, he's a professor at Cal Berkeley. He's, you know, been a longtime professor there, one of the big voices on sports and society. He's worked with Major League Baseball when they had the Al Campana thing. And so Harry Edwards is in the fabric when it comes to sports and sociology. Anyway, I say execute his protest last year without the knowledge of knowing that there could be ramifications, and he was willing to do that. Mm. So let me just say that from the standpoint of, you know, Kaepernick knew that it was possible. And I'm not saying that he should not have a job because he knew.
Right.
No, not at all. I'm with him for, you know, making that stand. I mean, he was like one of the most, I don't know if he was the most influential person by Time Magazine at the end of the year or one of them. But Kaepernick, you know, took his stand, and I think years from now, regardless of whether or not he gets in the league or gets back into the league or not, he's going to be viewed as a game changer in terms of, you know, this narrative. But in terms of the idea of all NFL players, you know, walking off the job, I don't know if that really helps you, because then what? You know, then what? Well, you know, the owners, you know, we're talking about a Kaepernick situation in the NFL, but we're also talking about an issue with, you know, society at large that has sparked people, motivated people to raise awareness and have gestures and protest the anthem.
Before I let you go, you were at the Patriots and Texans practice. What do you think about the Texans and specifically about Deshaun Watson?
Yeah. So you're going to get around to Deshaun Watson. I knew you would do that. That's what everybody wants to know with the Texans.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really cool. You know, that's the story with the Texans. I mean, they've won the division title in back-to-back years, right? Their defense was number one last year without J.J. Watt.
Right.
Okay, just think about that. We knew J.J. Watt was a beast. And then he gets hurt, and he's out for pretty much the whole year. And then, boom, you know, he's gone, and they've got the number one defense. So you bring him back, and the defense is going to be good. So now Bill O'Brien, who is allegedly a quarterback guru, quarterbacks in 3 years, right? Okay, they spent all that money on Brock Osweiler, and I think it was pretty apparent as time went on that maybe Rick Smith and the owner, Bob McNair, wanted Brock Osweiler, and Bill O'Brien didn't want Brock Osweiler because it just didn't work. And I remember last year talking to McNair, the Texans owner, about, you know, why they paid so much for Brock Osweiler, who had, you know, only so much experience in Denver, right? Wasn't bad, but wasn't worth, you know, $70-something million and $37 million guarantee or whatever. And I remember McNair just told me, just admitted, he's like, hey, he was the best guy out there. We had to do something. We had to go get the best guy. And that's what the market, you know, bore for us last year. So this year they took a different track. They got rid of Osweiler, and they moved up to get Deshaun Watson. There was a lot of conversation, Kim, before the draft about Watson's potential, right? And you know, his college coach was like, you know, this, if they pass up on him, they're passing up on Dabo Swinney. And like, they're passing up on Michael Jordan, right? And I kind of went with Deshaun's the guy, you can't pass up on him. But from my standpoint, basically the reason why I felt that was that I watched him play games in Clemson. I didn't see Mitchell Trubisky at all.
Yeah.
So I don't really know how good Mitchell Trubisky is or will be or what I think of him, because I just was not exposed to him, right? Patrick Mahomes, the other guy that the Chiefs got, they moved up for. He may end up being, you know, the next Joe Montana. I don't know, because I didn't watch him. But I saw Deshaun Watson, and I went, wow, this kid, get him in the pro system, get him some coaching, let him grow, develop, he is going to be, you know, the truth. And so I just felt that about Deshaun Watson from, you know, my naked eye watching him. He's a versatile player. So from what I understand, no football player since Warren Moon in 1984 has generated the buzz in Houston like Deshaun Watson. So it's just a matter of when. And from what I was told at Texans camp yesterday, he is closing the gap daily on Tom Savage. So he may not start the season as a starter, and we know Bill O'Brien will yank a guy up.
So it's coming.
It's just a matter of when. But hopefully, when it does happen, O'Brien and the Texan O'Brien will stick with him and let him develop, because there's going to be growing pains just because that happens. But the Texans are a team that you know can, you know, get to the playoffs without good quarterbacking. So you think that if they can, you know, improve in that area, they may be able to go to the next level, which in this standpoint would be advancing to say that the AFC title game or something like that, going deeper in the playoffs than they have. But yeah, Deshaun Watson, he got a chance yesterday to, in the last couple of days, to work alongside Tom Brady and alongside, not in the drills together, but on the same practice field,
yeah,
where he could observe Brady. And the one thing that, and I wrote about it today, I got a column up on USAtoday.com about it, is that if you watch Tom Brady and you're a young quarterback, and you say, well, what is he doing that's so special that makes him Tom Brady? Well, you saw Tom Brady yesterday, and I've seen it. I was the pool reporter last year in Houston during the Super Bowl week, right? And so I got to watch the Patriots practice, and I've actually been a pool reporter for them a couple of times. And you watch him in practice, and it's like playing a game, right? And that's kind of the intensity that he comes at it with. And we saw that yesterday on the practice field in West Virginia, and that's just something that maybe Deshaun Watson will take away and say, yep, that's that guy. That's why he's as good as he is, even at 40 years old and all that. He's really, you know, pays attention to it. I'll give you a quick other example because it popped in my head yesterday. I remember the year they had Darrell Revis and Brandon Browner, and they were going up against Brady, the defense, and practice and stuff. Man, those practice sessions were intense. Okay, training camp, right? And they are just, you know, really, you know, playing with so much passion. They care about stopping the offense, and the offense cares about scoring on the defense. And you had my man Revis over there with his group and Will Fork and all of them when they were there. It really mattered to them. And so when you play with that kind of intensity in practice, it can't do anything but help you overcome 28-3 in the fourth, in the football, right? You know, and the Cowboys used to be like that back in the day too, Kim, when they had Aikman Emmitt. When they got to practice, it meant something on the practice field, and you could see it in training camp. So maybe that was something that Deshaun Watson noticed about Tom Brady yesterday. Brady was pissed off that he missed Gronkowski on the out pattern. You know, they were going live against the Texans defense. He was upset that the guys didn't run the routes the right way, screaming, barking, like, oh, yeah.
Well, I think Deshaun Watson has studied Tom Brady, and if you watched him in that first preseason game and just some things he does in terms of how he is really patient and his footwork a little bit, I mean, you can tell that Tom is a guy that he has studied, and that's one of the things that I think is going to help Deshaun. We know he has ability, but that he studies the game. He's a student of the game, and that's going to be huge.
And talking to Brady yesterday, Kim, you know, he talked about being 40 years old and, you know, how the game is, you know, slowed down for him over the years. And he talked about the mental part. And then he made a little wisecrack. He's like, you know, if I had Deshaun Watson's skills, I was really up there. I might have been a fourth-round pick. He said Deshaun Watson running a 4.47 in the 40-yard dash versus Brady's 5.2. Now, Brady, there's a couple things about him physically. You know, we know he's been durable, but, you know, he doesn't scramble like Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, obviously, and like Deshaun Watson. So he's not that kind of guy, but he still has pretty good footwork for a guy who is slow when it comes to maneuvering in the pocket. So we're not talking about him taking it wide like Aaron Rodgers and then slinging it over there, no. But he may step up, move over, shift up, step up, and then find some, you know, a hole, and he does that very well. The other thing he does, he's tougher than he looks. When you talk about third and one, fourth and one, there's no quarterback in the NFL, and I didn't believe this until somebody told me, and then I started watching it. There's nobody in the NFL who's better on, like, a quarterback sneak, and a quarterback sneak can be a real physical play.
Right.
Tom Brady has had that down for a long time, and it takes a little bit of toughness, so I'll just say that. In terms of talking about, you know, his physicality, because we know he can still sling it and he can read defenses and all that. And I know you weren't asking about Brady, you're talking about Deshaun Watson, but those are the types of things that one quarterback can appreciate from another quarterback. I am so excited to see what happens with Deshaun Watson moving forward. I really think the Texans
know that means that you'll be coming to Houston to cover some games, so we'll have to have dinner when you come. A couple of my friends have produced a documentary called Olympic Pride, American Prejudice, and they interviewed Dr. Harry Edwards in that. So they're going to be screening it in Houston September the 7th. I'm going to moderate it. It's going to be at the Houston Museum of African American Culture. So for those of you, they do great work, and this is their second documentary, so I'm super excited that they're bringing it to Houston. I've got a chance to see it. I saw the trailer a few years ago, but I've actually had a chance to watch the whole documentary. So, but listen, as always, and don't hold this against me, I told you 15 minutes. Next time I will keep it to that. I appreciate you, and we will talk soon. Jared Bell, if you want to follow Jared and his work, you should, usatoday.com, but also you can follow him on Twitter, at Jared Bell, so I'll put his link on the page. Thank you so much, my friend.
All right, Kim, take care. Thanks,
all right, Tom. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, that's Jared Bell, everybody. He is USA Today. He's a columnist. He's covered the National Football League for years. I got a chance to know Jared through NABJ when I was active, and he's one of the people that I've kept in touch with, and so I appreciate him because he brings a perspective from covering the entire National Football League, and because he has access to owners and general managers, and so it's good to have his voice on the show, and he has written extensively about Colin Kaepernick and players who have stood or not stood, and I'm glad I got a chance to ask him about Hugh Jackson's comments on just yesterday. So thank you guys for being a part of this week's show, and we started the show, of course, we talked a lot about the National Football League. I said there's no way I could do a show this week and not talk about what's happening around the country. I encourage people to stand up for what you believe and just be smart about it, you know, but it's not the time to be quiet. We have to be counted. And I was impressed or pleased that people on a national level, that CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, generals of the armed services are making a statement. They're basically saying, you know, despite what the president says and Andre says, I did believe he was a true racist. I felt like he was just riding the waves of hate, but no, he is mentally ill. He's an interesting cat, you know. Kim said he's a racist. We don't have to play around with that. It's a fact. You know, it is. We are in some interesting times, and I say it's a time to be counted. And there are different ways that we can do that. You know, I cover the National Football League, and so. You know, I think it's important for me to continue to cover it and to have a voice and to bring stories. But I think that we can all be counted. It's just about finding the way to do that. You know, it is undeniable that right now these are some really interesting times in our nation. And, you know, thank you, Marche. Welcome. Glad to have you on board. It's an interesting time in our nation. And, you know, it's not going to just be gone. You know, something is going to have to happen, and hopefully it's not anything more catastrophic, because there's been a lot of catastrophic things, in my opinion, that happen every time I see somebody lose their life. This past weekend in Charlottesville, the young woman who lost her life in that peaceful protest, that's catastrophic when I see police beating down black men and women. That's catastrophic, or doing an unbelievably, what I would say, illegal cavity search on a woman looking for marijuana. That is catastrophic. But it could, you know, this whole level of violence could escalate. And so, you know, I think it's important to have conversations with people who don't think like us. And I invite them to my show. I invite them on my page. My rule is just you have to be respectful. I have seen people post stuff. And when there's a level of vitriol that's just so hateful, you know, I saw a lady post something in Houston about the MLK statue that I actually had a little bit of help when I did a project with the company that built the rail in terms of getting that statue and that plaza built. I saw this lady post a picture and say something, a conservative, you know, very conservative woman. I think maybe she calls herself a Tea Partier. I'm not really sure. And talk about the statue and with some crazy comments. And I thought, see, this is how things get off kilter. You know, you're talking about a man who stood for peace and love and unity, as opposed to people who were about segregation and, you know, wanted to keep slavery and Jim Crow. I mean, it's night and day. And so we have to be careful not to get caught up. Good morning, Erica Hilliard. Thank you. Welcome. I appreciate that. And so I just encourage all of you to, you know, stand up and be counted, be smart about it, and don't let people take you out of your space, right? Because people say some really stupid, ignorant stuff. And so either it's an opportunity to educate them, and if you're not able to do that, then just walk away. But be counted. You know, if you, when you have an opportunity to shed some light and do so in a way that you can be heard, because that's the other thing. We have to say things in a way that we can be heard. And I'm not talking about watering it down, but we have to know how to have the conversation. And unfortunately, we already don't communicate effectively anymore, period, right? And so now we've got to communicate about something that's really personal, no matter what side you stand on. And I think, you know, one of the things we can do when you say when I say stand up and be counted, you know, I'm always on y'all about contacting your congressmen and women and your senators and your governor. You know, let them, you can contact them and say, listen, this is what I think you should be doing. This matters to me as one of your constituents. Let them hear from you. It's time for me to put in a call to my people right now again, too, or send an email. And I don't get responses, but I know it's counted. And so I know that they have to have, they got communication from Kim Davis, whether they respond to it or not. And so I will continue to do that. And so pay attention. Try not to be, you know, we can be so angry that we can't function and we're stressed out and it weighs us down. And so I encourage you not to let that be your story, but to definitely stand up and be counted. We absolutely have to stay awake. And wherever you stand on what's happening with the National Football League, you know, maybe your call is to an owner. You know, maybe there's a letter to an owner. And so I hope that Jared's conversation that we have, I have with Jared, help give some sense of, you know, why all players may not be able to just take a knee or sit down, you know, because quite frankly, we don't all do anything anyway. You know, there are many of us, you know, I've seen some conversation that somebody included me on a chain on Twitter that when I get off the show, I've got to take myself off of. Some people of color who are having some conversations about statues and that doesn't matter. See, I'm really careful about where I allow myself to be seen. And so I don't want to be a part of a chain where people are acting like the symbolism of what statues mean doesn't matter, because to me it does. And so I can't have my name and Twitter handle in a conversation with something that I don't agree with. So that's how I can also be counted. I've got to go and remove myself from that, because those people have a right to have their opinion, but don't drag me into that nonsense, because to me that's what it is. I do care about what those symbolic things are. There we go. Man, technology. So we are out of time for today's show. Thank you so much for being a part of Chalk Talk. Remember to follow me on Twitter, at Kim Y. Davis. If you're not following my Kim Y. Davis page, please follow it, and also make sure that you sign up to get the notification so that you'll be notified. I've moved the show over to my business page, and we're going to continue to build here. And in case you missed it, put September 7th on your calendar. There's going to be a screening of Olympic Pride, American Prejudice. My friends Lacey Barnes is one of the producers. Deborah Rowdy Draper is the director, and I'm super excited that they are bringing that project to Houston. It's going to be at the Houston Museum of African American Culture, and I'm going to moderate the discussion. Honored, as always, that they would include me. So check that out. Put it on your calendar. Sign up and be there. And that is all for this week's show. I will see you next Thursday at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. Where's our music to take us out of here? 7:30 p.m. Lacey says it's at 7:30 p.m. Absolutely. Where are we? Here we go. I don't know what happened to my exit music. It's not queuing up. Anyway, we can still end the show. We're out of time. Have a great, great week. I will see you next Thursday. Be sure to follow me throughout the weekend on Twitter. I'll be covering the Texans game on Saturday. Follow me for live updates, and they will have practice back in Houston next week. I will certainly be there as well. Have a great, great week. Thank you guys for being here. Do something kind for yourself and something kind for somebody else. Also, remember, be sure that you stand up. See you next week. See you guys.